Starting therapy is simple with BetterHelp. Finding a therapist that you feel comfortable with and can meet in the privacy of your own space is one of the best things about BetterHelp. And if you're not satisfied with the first therapist, you can easily switch to another one. I connected to a therapist that had the understanding and the skills I was looking for and have really benefited from my time with her. If you're struggling and think you'd benefit from a therapy session, go to betterhelp.com/healingtrauma during sign up and get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a compassionate guide for those seeking to heal and thrive. Introducing your host, Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach and fellow traveler on the path to healing. In this podcast, we will engage in heartfelt conversation with experts in the field of trauma healing. We'll explore ways to cultivate feeling safe in our bodies and in connection to others, so that we can be present to live the life we've been given more fully and with more joy. Join us as we navigate the way towards a life restored. Introducing your host, Monique Coven.
Hi, and welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast. My name is Dr. Mark McNear, and I will be your guest host today, filling in for Monique. Today, I am both pleased and filled with gratitude toward my guest, and that is Adam Young. Adam is a licensed clinical social worker. He's a podcaster. His podcast is The Place We Find Ourselves, and he is recently a published author. Adam, I want to welcome you once again to the Healing Trauma Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. It's so good to be here.
I love the name of your book, Making Sense of Your Story. And it goes on to say why engaging your past with kindness changes everything. Adam, when did you realize you had a story, so to speak?
Late 30s. If you had asked me as a 35-year-old man, Adam, what's your story? I would have had maybe a couple of sentences about, you know, my growing up years, my parents were married, my mom this, my dad that, I went to this college, you know, but I would have had no category for the idea that actual incidents, scenes from my growing up years were profoundly affecting my life as an adult. I had not made a connection between the stories of my family of origin and the brain that was in my head as a 35-year-old man.
If we can unpack that for a minute, that idea of these moments that you had showed you what?
It showed me that the life that I was experiencing in my adulthood was not random. It was linked, and that's just because we have neurons. It was linked to my experiences as a boy. And those linkages were not only necessary to understand, but result in a lot of freedom, release, settledness, because our life starts to make more sense when we understand why we feel what we do and we are interacting with others the way that we are.
If somebody wants to start looking at their story, unpacking it, and maybe we can use your story as an example.
Sure.
And kind of weave that in as you're comfortable with that.
Sure.
You know, somebody comes and they say, I have these symptoms or I have these unwanted things in my life, which is just so common, especially with trauma. And they come and they say, I'm afraid, but I want to start understanding my story. What did that look like for you? And what would it maybe look like for them?
Well, first of all, I understand the fear. There's something in our bodies, frankly, that has an awareness of a lot of the heartache and harm that we experienced during our growing up years. And so it's really understandable if you are approaching the idea of engaging your story and you feel some fear rise up. Like, that makes sense. That means you're listening to your body and you're taking your story seriously. And for someone who's wanting to begin, I really like your word symptom. I would begin with what's present. We all have symptoms. Symptoms merely refer to the way the past is playing out in the present. And so whether the symptoms are anxiety, depression, difficulty with relationships, difficulty with God, marital difficulties, whatever it is, what if you brought curiosity and some measure of kindness to the particularity of the symptoms that you're experiencing, and then asked, how might this be related to my growing up years? And just see what comes up in terms of memory, because there's always a linkage between the past and the present. And the reason for that is neurons. We have to understand that our brain is composed of billions and billions of neurons. And there's only two ways that neurons link up with one another. One is genetics, hair color, eye color, height. The other is life experiences, which is to say stories. And so if you want to understand the brain that is currently in your skull and filtering your present life, you've got to understand something of your stories, particularly your stories of heartache and harm. What it looked like for me was somebody gave me in my mid-30s a copy of the book, The Wounded Heart by Dan Allender. And I read it cover to cover. Why? Because it described the landscape of my heart better than anything I had ever read. And that book is for adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse. Now, when I read that book, Mark, I had no notion that I had experienced sexual abuse. Not at all. That's not why I read the book. I ignored the subtitle and dove in anyways because the writing was resonating with me. But what the book introduced me to was the idea that in my family of origin, I had experiences of heartache and harm, and that those experiences matter, and that I need to understand something of them, and I need to bring some presence. That's a really important word. I need to bring some presence, some care, some attention to the boy in those stories, 6 years old, 10 years old, 16 years old. I need to bring some presence, some care, some listening, some attention to the boy who experienced. We all have some memories of moments. We don't ever remember the whole story, but we have fragments of memories, all of us. And do we welcome those memories or do we dismiss them as no big deal? That surely isn't affecting me. It was 30 years ago. I should be over it. However you dismiss the boy or girl in the story.
I had somebody I was talking to the other day that just said to me, these things were really rough for me. But it compared to other people, this was nothing. And I'm, you know, so I want you to weigh in on that.
Well, the key word there is compared to other people. And here's how I say it in the book. If you have a broken arm and you have a friend who has two broken legs, it doesn't make your broken arm hurt any less or need any less care and tending just because your friend has a more severe injury. There is always going to be someone with more trauma than you have. The question is, why are you allowing that reality to dismiss, discount, avoid your own broken arm, your own trauma, your own heartache, your own harm? What I want to invite the reader to is to take their stories of heartache and harm seriously. The biblical passage that I often come back to is in Jeremiah 6 and 8, where God gets angry at the leadership of Israel. Why? Because it says this, they dress the wounds of my people as though those wounds were not serious. Peace, peace, they say, when there is no peace. Now, sadly, that's what many of us do with our own wounds. We dress them as though they're not serious. We ignore them and dismiss them and minimize them. And we say, like you just said, compared to so-and-so, I had it so much better. Therefore, I'm not going to explore, engage, provide any care for those wounds. And that's exactly what God is thundering against in Jeremiah.
Why do you think we do that? Why we have harm, and then it seems like we bring more harm? I've heard you talk a little bit about this. Tell me your thoughts on that.
It is deeply uncomfortable to feel, as a 58-year-old woman, for example, the feelings of the 12-year-old girl. And all of us, no matter how old you are, we have unfelt feelings in our body. Why? Because when you were 6, 8, 10, 12 years old, for many of you, your home was not a safe enough place for you to feel your feelings and to be met with care, containment, engagement, soothing. And therefore, there was no space or place for you to feel your terror, your sorrow, your feelings, your anger, any of those feelings. And so we bury those feelings in the cellars of our heart. And years later, decades later, for those of us who have enough care later, we finally are able to begin to integrate those feelings by feeling them. But that's an uncomfortable process because you're not going to feel 58 anymore. You're going to feel 12.
So that's one of the areas to go to look at triangles. Tell us about triangles and maybe what that was like for you.
Well, I think sooner or later, everyone needs to draw what I call their triangle. And all that means is think of an upside down triangle where the, you know, it's called an isosceles triangle, if you remember from geometry. So at the top of the triangle, the two points at the top represent caretaker one, caretaker two, mom, dad, stepmom, stepdad, whatever your family structure looked like. And at the bottom point of the triangle is you, the child. And what I want to invite people to do is to draw their triangle where the closeness of the points of the triangle represent the emotional closeness of the relationships. So in a healthy family, mom and dad at the top, caretaker one and two at the top, they're going to be closer to one another emotionally than either one of them is to you, the child. But in many families, certainly in my family, the child becomes emotionally closer to one of the parents, and it's not the child's fault. It's a requirement placed on the child to function as an adult, and in many cases, to function as a surrogate spouse to one of the parents. So when the parental relationship of the two primary caretakers is not strong and healthy and engaged, very often, one of the parents will look to one of the children to be a sort of surrogate spouse. So my triangle, the closeness of those two points between me and my mom, that's the shortest side of the triangle. Because I was emotionally much closer to my mother than my mother was to my father. And that is deeply harmful to a child.
I think for me, let me just share a personal experience. I had the same thing with my mom. And I remember her saying, well, I have nobody to talk to. If I don't talk to you, who am I going to talk to? You know, I remember it coming up in my body, 10, 11, 12. I didn't say it, but it was like, go talk to anyone. Just leave me alone. It's interesting because I used to look at that at times as like I was privileged. Can you
say more about why you felt privileged?
Well, I think because we had such a dysfunctional family, I felt like there was at least somebody that I was connecting with. Obviously, I was being smothered.
Yes.
I guess I was thinking to myself as a little kid, better this than nothing.
Right. And that is super common. A great word that you used. I felt privileged. When we are chosen, so I come from a family of five. I have two younger brothers. They're twins. And I was chosen by my mother for that quote unquote special, close, confidant relationship. My brothers were not. So they were unchosen. And that's some of the harm that they have borne. But I was the chosen golden child, the surrogate spouse to my mother in place of my father being that spouse to her, emotionally speaking. And you do feel privileged. You do feel chosen. You do feel special. But it is not love. It is something very different than love. Why? Because the child is being forced to serve the needs of the parent rather than the child being able to be a child. So parent-child relationships are not intended to be equal and reciprocal. That's what the marriage is for. That's what the two parents are supposed to be doing.
Could you just say that again? That was awesome.
Parent-child relationships are not intended to be reciprocal and equal like two adults may have. The child is supposed to receive, receive, receive. And the parent is supposed to give, 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 offer, offer, care, care, care. But what happens, the term is a triangulated parent-child relationship, is the child is required to function as an adult. And that relationship does feel privileging. It does feel special, but it is deeply harmful to the child because the child's not able to be 12 because they're being 28.
So another thing that you talk about, which I really, really appreciate, Adam, that you know, your story and investigating it, becoming curious about it, not having contempt toward it, having compassion, it needs more than one pass. Could you talk about that?
Yes, I like the way you put that. My story is not something to be conquered, to be overcome, to be worked through, to be healed. There is no end goal where I can put it on the shelf and I'm done with it and now I can get on with my life. No. My story is continually being written each day, and my stories from the past need care, curiosity, and repeated exploration. What do I mean by that? I mean, I need multiple people to hear my stories. Why? Because that boy was so lonely, so alone, so unwitnessed in his trauma. And what we know about trauma, I mean, Gabor Mate is really good at emphasizing this, but so do others. What we know about trauma is that it's not the bad event itself that makes something become embedded as trauma in our bodies. It is the lack, it is a bad event, and then the lack of care, soothing, containment, witness, holding by other people who can comfort us. When you have the comfort and the care, the bad event does not become an embedded trauma. You're able to process it through and work through it. But for so many of us, it wasn't just the bad event. It's that we were utterly alone in the wake of it, and we couldn't metabolize it, and we couldn't integrate it, and we couldn't process it. And so we have fragmentation as a result in our brains. And by that, I mean bodily sensations are disconnected from emotions, and they're disconnected from thoughts, and they're disconnected from autobiographical memory. And when I say disconnected, I mean spatially. I mean, the neurons that hold, go ahead.
I was going to say to you, and maybe you're getting to it, that idea of, okay, well, what is fragmentation? Like if somebody's listening and they're like, okay, he's talking about separation, he's talking about fragmentation, but what does that look like?
Have you ever had those days where everything just feels harder than usual and you can't quite figure out why? Recently, I've learned that sometimes it's not just stress or lack of sleep. It could be my hormones at play. That's where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Just answer a few questions about what you're going through and where you're at in life. And the best part, after taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. Taking care of your hormones isn't just about feeling good right now. It's about investing in your long-term health. By taking the hormone quiz, you'll learn more about your hormone balance and can make small, intentional changes to support your body, whether it's with Hormone Harmony or another Happy Mammoth product. The quiz helps guide you towards solutions that work specifically for you. One of the best things about Hormone Harmony is how it's become such an essential part of so many women's daily routines. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. In fact, a survey found that 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw improved mood, and 100% said they felt like themselves again. Ready to start feeling like yourself again? Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order with my code HEALING at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEALING for 15% off today.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
For a person.
It looks like you might have big feelings during an interaction with your spouse, for example, and have no idea where those big feelings are coming from. You know it's quote unquote disproportionate to the present circumstance, but you see a look on her face or a tone in her voice, and all of a sudden you're feeling large amounts of shame or you're feeling large amounts of fear. There's a reason for that, even though it's disproportionate to the present circumstance. Now, we call those experiences overreactions, but they're not. It's just neurons firing present and past. And when neurons fire, oftentimes you get connected to big feelings from your past that are fragmented. By that, I mean they're disconnected from your thoughts, your sensations, your autobiographical memory. And so you don't know that you're remembering something from the past. You just feel like you're a little bit crazy, but you're not.
I can remember with my wife, Debbie, we were talking about something. I was in rehab and I just kept saying, "You're not hearing me."
Yes.
And I was like, "No, you're not hearing me." And she kept saying, "But I am hearing you."
You were not feeling heard. And my guess is in that moment, it was something very important to you that was both linked to the present and the past that you needed to be witnessed. Like you needed her to get it, whatever you were trying to communicate. And you were not experiencing non-verbally through her communication that she was really hearing you. And we all have a deep need to be heard. But here's what I want to say. We don't just have a deep need to be heard in the present. I need you to hear my stories from the past that my body holds that have not been sufficiently witnessed, engaged, and cared for. I need you to hear those stories and to name me well in those stories. In other words, for you to tell me what you feel and think as I'm narrating what happened to me as a 12-year-old boy. I need to know your reaction so that I can understand better what it was like for me as a 12-year-old boy. Because we can't do this work of story engagement alone. None of us can. Engaging your story requires the presence of other people.
And that can be terrifying.
Yes, because we're afraid that the places of shame, the places where we have big feelings from the past, that if we bring that to someone else, they will not welcome us. They will not delight in us. They might shame us. They might not know what to do with us. And those fears are very understandable. But the reverse is also true. When you're able to bring your story unedited in all of its rawness, in all of your big feelings to someone else, and they welcome you and they care for you and they give you their presence, few things are as healing for the brain as that interpersonal joining.
When we talk about neuroscience, because we talk about this healing with story work, and we talk about neuroscience, and I've heard you talk about what we have discovered with telling our stories, having them witnessed, and how that plays out in our nervous system.
Yeah, Louis Cozzolino has done a lot of work on, he's a neuroscientist, on the importance of developing a coherent autobiographical memory. But Dan Siegel is another name that comes to mind, Alan Shore. There are lots of neuroscientists that are coming to this realization, conclusion, and this is really 20 or 30 years old now, is the simple point that if you want to heal from trauma, you have to tell a coherent story of your developmental years. It has to make sense to you. It's not in the past, and it can't be buried without immense consequences in the present. So I need to make sense of my story in order to be free to live fully as Adam in the present. If I don't make sense of my story, then there are going to be places in my present life where implicit memories from the past are being activated. And that means I get dysregulated, I get activated, I'm losing my temper, I'm shutting down, I'm dissociating, whatever it is, because the past and the present are linked.
Share a little more about that, because I think so many people, maybe because they don't want to go there, talk about the fact that the past is the past. I want to deal with present day.
Well, what I would say is that if you want to live free in the present, if you want to actually be in the present, you have to make sense of the places of harm and heartache from your past. Why? Because you don't only have this layer of memory called explicit memory. You also have a layer of memory that we call implicit memory. And there are two things to understand about implicit memory. Number one, implicit memories are recorded whether you are paying attention or not. So your implicit memory was the only form of memory that you had from the age 0 to about 24, 36 months of age. It's the only form of memory that infants and toddlers have. The other thing, second thing about implicit memory is when you remember an implicit memory, you have no sensation of recall, which means it feels present. Example, you're at the park with a friend. A Cocker Spaniel comes darting towards you, and you recoil in fear. And your friend kneels down on one leg, extends her arms to hug the incoming Cocker Spaniel. Why? Why? Because when you were 5 years old, you were attacked by a Cocker Spaniel. And so you have implicit memory of Cocker Spaniels equal danger. So your body recoils in fear when your friend's body does literally the opposite. But you don't have the sensation of recall because it's stored in implicit memory, not explicit memory. And so you don't know you're remembering anything at all. Now, if you can realize that your present experiences, your big emotions in the present have a reasonable cause that can be found in your past story, that gives you all sorts of compassion, curiosity, and kindness for yourself in the present, where we often have contempt and accusation.
Yeah.
You know, like, why am I behaving like this? What's wrong with me? That sort of thing.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many people come into my office and will say, this is absolutely crazy.
Yeah, that's right. That's why I wrote the book, Mark, because those people feel some level of agony. And it's not just because they have symptoms. It's because they feel like they shouldn't have those symptoms.
Right.
They feel crazy. They feel like they're not normal. And they don't understand that, oh, there's a really good reason for your behaviors and your feelings.
So they're carrying all this baggage. And then on top of that, they have the accusations that they place upon themselves. I must be crazy. And they're even carrying more then.
That's right. And then they're living with some measure of self-accusation and self-contempt. And it can be very hard to get out from under that rubble.
So that brings me to the title of your book, and bringing kindness to your past. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. For me, nothing has been more healing than the experience of learning to bring new levels of kindness from Adam to Adam. However, people who have a history of trauma tend to have wars with kindness. And by that, I mean with kindness from others and kindness from themselves. In other words, we tend to be much more comfortable with contempt, with violation, with violence, with accusation, with shame, than we are with kindness, soothing, care, and comfort. Why? Well, for many, many people, the person who abused them and harmed them also was kind and comforting and connected to them. And so there's a pairing in the neurons of our brains of kindness with violation, danger, bad things happening. That's the nature of abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, spiritual abuse. People are groomed with kindness and care and comfort, and then they're violated, especially as children. And so it's understandable, Mark, that many people who come into our offices are not comfortable with kindness. They're suspicious of it, and they're hypervigilant about it.
So as somebody steps in, and I'm going to just go back to this for a minute, if somebody wants to step into their story as a result of listening to this, Adam, you know, I first thing I'd say is get your book. But as you're listening now, what might be just a couple of steps that they could take in starting this process?
As you're listening, just notice what memories are coming up. And then the question is, will you welcome one of those memories, even if it's only partial and fragmentary? It's just a part. You don't remember the whole story, but you remember something. Will you welcome that memory as like a guest at your dinner table? In other words, set a place for him or her and then ask that 12-year-old boy, that 13-year-old girl from that story, what do you need me to know about that moment, that day, that story, that incident? And then let your pen or your keyboard take you deeper into the story as you write. What I'm inviting people to do is to write their stories, plural, because you have many of them, and then to read a story to someone who can hold that story well. Because you don't only need your story to be written, you need it to be witnessed and cared for.
And when you say somebody who could hold it well, what does that look like?
It doesn't necessarily have to be a therapist some alphabet soup behind their name. It does have to be someone who has done enough work with their own story that they know how to enter yours with some measure of courage and kindness. And kindness has nothing to do with niceness. It is not a listening ear. I need far more than a listening ear. I need you to enter with me into the big feelings I felt as a 12-year-old boy. And I need you, Mark, to tell me what's coming up for you as you hear me tell you what happened that day when I was 12. In other words, I need you to help name me well in that story. Name my fear, name my sorrow, name the betrayal, name the powerlessness, whatever it is that's in the story. Name the triangulation. I need you to help name the boy well, because none of us can see ourselves well. None of us. We need others. Why? Because it was normal for you. You probably don't even think of your stories as stories because it was just the way things were. But when you tell it to someone else, you might see a tear well up in their eye, or you might see their jaw tighten in anger. And you're like, what's going on? And they're having an emotional reaction because they know that's not the way it was supposed to be for that 12-year-old.
In holding a story well, and correct me if I'm wrong, it would be entering in to and participating in?
Yes.
Okay.
That's right. That's right. Yep.
So as we begin this work, what as we go along, there's a lot of misconceptions about what the end goal is.
Yeah.
That idea of, I'll get all of this resolved and I'll feel calm and I'll feel good, or I'll be able to finally put this on a shelf in the corner and not think. What is the end goal when you think about story work, Adam?
The end goal is to become more fully you than you were before. In other words, for your heart, for your soul, for your essence to be enlarged so that you are more able to weep and more able to rejoice. So that you have increased nervous system capacity to be alive to the beauty of this world and the heartache of this world. And so that you have increased nervous system capacity to be a good friend or spouse or father or mother, so that you can help midwife the people that you are close to into feeling their feelings, so that you can be a part of the healing of other people, so that you can be more fully present.
So you can hold their story better.
Yes.
Okay. All
right. Yes. I can't hold your story, Mark, if I can't hold my own. If all I'm doing is ignoring and dismissing and minimizing the boy in my stories, I'm going to ignore and minimize you as a boy, because I don't want to grapple with what it's like to be needy, because children have immense needs. And I don't want to grapple with what it's like to feel vulnerable, because children are vulnerable.
So I had mentioned earlier that you are a licensed clinical social worker, you're a podcaster, you're an author, you do a lot of speaking. I'd like to ask people this last question, and that is, Adam, and you're talking about you and your story and you becoming more alive and being there for people. What gets you up in the morning? What is your passion at this point? Like,
yeah, my passion at the end of the day is sitting with someone in this office or over Zoom and hearing one of their stories of heartache, harm, abuse from their growing up years and engaging with them about that now. I am passionate. I come alive when I help to set people free through the dialogue, through the engagement, and especially the nonverbal communication that happens when you are listened to. It's what you have the experience of what Dan Siegel calls feeling felt. I am passionate about people having their stories witnessed and them feeling felt as a boy or a girl so that they break through to new levels of freedom, vitality, and meaning in their lives.
That's awesome. So I just want to thank you for spending this time with us today.
This has been such a lovely conversation. I mean, we've covered a lot of terrain. I guess the parting thought would just be for the listeners, your story matters and you deserve to have that story told, heard, witnessed, engaged. And I really want to invite, if you have any stirrings inside as you've been listening, I want to invite you to write one of your stories. And I want to invite you, if you need a guide, a help in that, get the book, Make Sense of Your Story. It'll guide you through that process. And it has lots of prompts to help you in that process. But your story is worth being told.
Thank you, Adam. It's been so good being with you.
Thank you, Dr. Mark.